Welcome to Aging in Place, a podcast about the challenges of home and community-based living for seniors and people living with disabilities, and discussing the tools and solutions available to residents of the state of Washington.
Throughout this podcast series, we have laid out the challenges and current services which support aging and disabled adults in their homes and communities and allow them to age in place. We have discussed that most families will experience the need for long-term care as they age. The ratio of personal caregivers to older adults will decline in future years as the baby boom generation turns 65 years or older. And we know that long-term services and supports are expensive. 40 hours a week of home care may cost over $66,000 a year. And this is much less expensive than institutional care, which may cost more than $130,000 annually. These costs result in Washingtonians spending down their savings to qualify for Medicaid to access services. On this final episode of Aging in Place, we are looking at the strategic planning for the future of our state. And this is an approach that is unique to Washington. It is referred to as the Long-Term Services and Supports Trust Act and was signed into law in 2019. In 2022, working Washingtonians began contributing to the benefit, which is also known as the Washington Cares Fund. We wanted to learn more about this WA Cares Fund.
So thanks for joining us today on Aging in Place. Today we are interviewing Ben Vechte, who is a director of the Washington Cares Fund. Ben, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So we have some questions regarding the Washington Cares Fund. It's kind of exciting that Washington is kind of the first in the nation, right, to launch this new long-term services and support safety net for its residents. For those who are unfamiliar, the Washington Cares Act is projected to reduce the burden on the state's Medicaid system and save taxpayers in Washington about $3.7 billion by the year 2052. And what's really great about this fund is that each beneficiary can access funds to cover services and supports that, you know, you might need to perform daily activities. There are a lot of great videos on YouTube and the Washington Cares Fund website, Ben. There's so much information out there. So for those who are available and interested in learning more about Washington Cares, I would recommend that you take a peek at this website. It's wacaresfund.wa.gov. And some of the videos and some information out there have kind of equated the Washington Cares Fund to Washington running a long-term care insurance. But this seems like it's more than a long-term care insurance. Can you share some key differences between Washington Cares and long-term care insurance?
Sure. Thank you. Great question. I think the main difference is affordability. The whole reason why the state enacted this program is because long-term care is unaffordable for most middle-class families. You know, high earners have access. If you're very wealthy, you can afford long-term care insurance. For a middle-aged couple today, it costs $5,000 per year for both of them to have long-term care insurance for them together. And what that means is you have to pay $5,000 a year, but not just until you retire, but until the day you die or need care. So if you live to be 90 years old, and you retire at 65, you have to keep paying that premium. Let's say you buy the policy when you're 50. You have to pay not only from the age 50 to age 65, but from, say, age 65 to 90 as well. That's an additional 25 years of paying premiums, more than twice as many years, right? And if you need care when you're 87, say, then you stop paying at 87, but you need to pay in for a long period of time. For WA Cares, first of all, the premium is much, much lower. The benefit's lower also, but the premium is much, much lower. For the typical worker, it's about $290 a year, which is a lot less than $2,500 per person in a couple. But you only pay that premium until you retire. So when you turn 65, you no longer owe the premium if you retire at 65. So it's much more affordable in that regard. But also, when it's time to claim benefits, in private insurance, you have to pay out of pocket. They call it an elimination period. It's like a deductible. You have to pay out of pocket for typically 90 service days or 90 calendar days. It differs by policy. If it's 90 service days, it could be 3 or 4 months of care before the policy will kick in. And it's not just a waiting period. It's actually a period during which you have to pay out of pocket. And so for most middle-class people, when the long-term care need strikes, they may not have that money to pay out of pocket for those 90 days. And if you don't have that money to pay out of pocket for those 90 days, the policy will never kick in. And even if it does kick in, you will have had to spend thousands of dollars before it does. So both in terms of the premiums and in terms of claiming benefits, WaCares is much more affordable than private long-term care insurance, which is why it addresses the need of the broad middle class. Whereas for the broad middle class, private long-term care insurance doesn't even come into question. Now, the median household income for retirees in Washington state is $64,000. On a net basis, that might be $45,000 for a couple. You can't afford to pay $5,000 annually in premiums out of that income. And so private insurance just isn't feasible for 90% of Washingtonians. So that's why WaCares was enacted, because it's fundamentally different. It's fundamentally more affordable than private long-term care insurance.
Thank you. So it sounds like for many folks who are retirement age, they would be accessing or kind of expected to access a Medicare benefit initially only if they can crack open that Medicare A benefit in a nursing facility. I know they have that about that 90-day window or so. So I can see where there's some similarities and some pretty glaring gaps in long-term services and support delivery that Washington Cares Fund is able to kind of meet those needs. So that's exciting. Thank you for that information.
Oh, and one clarification on that.
Yeah.
So Medicare will only pay if you came out of an emergency room first. So it's
right, a hospital.
Medicare doesn't,
exactly.
Right, doesn't cover long-term care unless you had a medical emergency and then you need rehab temporarily. But it doesn't cover long-term care the way that in-home care, for example.
Yeah, exactly right. Only a cap, right? 100 days max, which is not really what long-term care insurance
is. And also,
or long-term
they wouldn't
benefit.
Cover that, for example, if I have a dementia diagnosis, Medicare won't cover it for those 100 days. It will
Indeed.
Only cover it if I break my hip and go to the ER.
Right.
It's not because I need long-term care. It's because I had an emergency room visit. So it's a different thing.
Short-term rehab stays only.
Yeah.
Exactly. So for traditional long-term care insurance, there's often a requirement of a HIPAA trigger to access benefits. What is this HIPAA trigger? And describe whether or how this trigger is limiting in any way.
Sure. So with a Medicaid-style trigger, like we have in our Medicaid program or currently have for WaCares, you can get access to long-term care a little bit earlier in your care trajectory. And even if it's a shorter-term need, you can still qualify. Under the HIPAA trigger, it's different in a couple of ways. One is in the assessment when it's conducted with the person in their home, the assessor has to determine that they're going to need care for at least 90 days or longer. So some people, like say I have a bike accident or I needed hip surgery or foot surgery, I might be laid up for 2 months, but not for 3 months or longer. So under the HIPAA trigger, I wouldn't qualify for benefits, but I would under WaCares. The other aspect is that under HIPAA, you need to require significant assistance. So often that's interpreted as meaning you would be a danger to yourself or others if you didn't have access to care. So for example, if the assessor thinks that you might wander and cause harm to yourself, or that you might leave something on the stove and cause a fire in your home, or trip trying to get in and out of the shower. So you have to be slightly farther along in your care trajectory to qualify and meet the HIPAA trigger than you would do under a Medicaid-style trigger.
Understood. Okay, thank you. So in the Washington Cares plan design, there were some changes or revisions that legislature enacted or somehow impacted back in 2022. Can you talk us through that a bit? How did the plan change from its original design?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and we are the first state in the country to do this, so it's expected that there'll be tweaks along the way. The biggest problem you have doing this in one state as opposed to doing it nationally is, how do you deal with people who are out of state and work in Washington? Because people live in Idaho or live in Oregon and they work, some of them commute to work in Washington. There's no wall around the state, right? And so that affected about 150,000 people. And so the legislature now says that those people can apply for an exemption. If they know they're not going to ever live in Washington state, they might want to apply for an exemption. The other exemption categories they introduced there were for non-immigrant visa holders. So if you're on a visa that says that you have to leave the country after a certain period of time, you could apply for an exemption. Military spouses as well, because they tend to move around every 3 years. And then veterans who are 70% or greater service-connected disabled. The reason for those exemptions for the first three was just equity. We want to make sure in a social insurance program that people who pay in have a plausible path to claiming benefits. It's not a tax, it's a premium for a benefit that you're able to get out, kind of like Social Security or Medicare. Those are not taxes that go to the general fund that can be used on roads, bridges, and schools. Those are for a specific purpose, right? And right. So that's the rationale for that. And the VA one was, the veterans one was simply because if you're 70% or greater service connected disabled, you have a guaranteed access to long-term care through the VA. And so they already have that and they didn't need WalkCare. So we didn't want to ask them to pay in unless they want to. And so those were the main changes. And then the big remaining change in the same of the same vein is that the commission, our oversight body, the LTS Trust Commission, has recommended that benefits become portable so that if you retire out of state, you can use the benefits in another state. So that's something that the legislature might take up in the future. It was recommended in the commission report this past year. They decided not to open the statute at all in the 2023 session. I think they were concerned that it might complicate implementation this July if they made big changes at the last minute, but they might take it up in the future. That's a big remaining issue.
There is some misinformation about Washington Cares payroll deductions and benefits that's kind of floating out there in the ether. You described earlier that the premium on average is about $290 per year. So will there be benefit caps and limitations associated with the lower premium? Talk us through that.
There are no daily or weekly or monthly benefit caps. Sometimes people think there are, because in an early version of the legislation, there had been a $100 a day cap, but that was eliminated before it was ever enacted. So there is a lifetime cap of $36,500. The premium can't go up unless there's a statute change. So I know some people are confused by that, because in the paid leave program, the premium can fluctuate based on demand without a statute change, and it has done that. But WalkCare's premium is in stone in statute at 0.58% of wages, and it can't go up unless the legislature were to change that. So,
thank you for that clarification.
Sure.
So we're in like launch mode, surely, right?
Because yes.
Washington Cares Fund is planning on rolling out to beneficiaries in 2026. Is that right?
That's right. That's when the premiums start this July, but the benefits start in 2026.
So what do you see as the greatest challenges in preparing for this beneficiary launch date?
The greatest challenges, I would say, is communicating with 7 million people in our state to give them information to understand the value proposition of what they're contributing to. You know, we're asking people to contribute about 0.5% of each paycheck to a fund to provide them long-term care security when they need it. There's a lot of people in our state haven't thought yet about their long-term care needs. You know, if you're in your 20s or 30s, or even your 40s, you may never have thought about the issue. People tend to think about the issue once they have a parent or a grandparent who needs it. Often, until your parents need it, you don't really think about it. So people in their 50s usually are aware of this issue, you know, because their parents are experiencing it. But younger people often aren't. And then the other part of this is that none of us like to think about getting older, much less think about needing assistance to get by when we're older. It's a difficult thing to think about, right? And then there's a lot of misconceptions that many people think that long-term care means nursing home care,
right?
But that's actually not the predominant way people get long-term care. Most people get it in their home, and most people want to get it in their home. Exactly. One of the big advantages of WalkCares is it makes it possible for middle-class people to stay in their own home at least for another year or two as they age. And many people need care for less than a year. So I think that's another aspect, is that helping people understand that what long-term care is, that it's usually care in the home. A third of people only need it for a year or less, so WalkCares would meet all of their needs. Another third of people need it for 1 to 3 years, and for those people, WalkCares would meet a big chunk of their needs. And with family support, they might meet all of their needs, and they would never need to spend down and apply for Medicaid or go to a nursing home. And of course, for some people, for about a third of people, they'll have longer care trajectories, and they would exhaust their WalkCares benefits and spend down their assets and go on Medicaid. But getting that information out there to people is the biggest challenge, because no matter how hard we try, it's hard to reach 7 million people in all of the places where they get their information. And often it requires a conversation and not just having someone read a one pager or something, right? Or read an article in the newspaper. So we're trying to have those conversations with people so that people understand why this is important and why it's important to be prepared for it. Because once tragedy strikes, once somebody has a dementia diagnosis, or slips in the shower and breaks their hip, families wish that they had been prepared, and they see the need. But oftentimes, you know, it's kind of like fire insurance, right? Nobody thinks about fire insurance till their house burns down, right? And then suddenly it becomes something that they wish they'd had, but then it's too late, right? And so with something like Walk Cares, we're asking people to pay in before the tragedy strikes for decades. And so getting people to be understand the risk, even though the risk is in the distant future, and be willing to pay in and prepare for it, like they do for Medicare or Social Security, right? That is the biggest challenge is that communications challenge.
And looking at all of the projections, and there's a lot of information out there that indicates about 70% of aging adults, right, will need some kind of long-term service and support benefit. So you can see that the odds are we're investing in a future benefit for ourselves and for other Washingtonians. So I did want to ask one more question, and that is, are there any other resources, listservs, or notification pathways that folks can subscribe to learn about updates or information about the Washington Cares Fund?
Yes, there are. If you go to the WalkCaresFund.gov website, there is a contact page where you can get in touch and ask for more information. There's a Learn More page as well. So there's plenty of resources on the website where people can get more information. We have a newsletter people can sign up for. I would encourage people to do that, and they would be updated regularly.
And you folks can sign up for that newsletter from the website as well?
That's correct.
Thanks again, Ben, for taking the time to answer these questions. And I'm sure we'll be in contact very soon.
Thank you so much.
Again, you can find more resources regarding the WAH Cares Fund on their website, to include subscription to a newsletter and updates about the fund. As a recap, this trust is intended to be an affordable insurance to access when a need arises. Working adults begin contributing to the premium and then can access the benefit after they retire. The benefit can be used for a range of services and supports, such as professional in-home care, adaptive equipment and devices, home accessibility modifications, home-delivered meals, and rides to medical appointments.
Aging in Place is produced by Julie Cope, Tobiah Panchin, and Lee Schuler in conjunction with the Evergreen State College Graduate Studies Program. For additional information, citations, and show notes, please visit us on the web at capstone.panchin.net.